documenting the crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
From just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5, Michigan Planning Region 2, this is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks, along with Vicki Davis, here with you again. Nice to have you with us as we once again document the crisis of our republic, the undermining of our national, state, and individual autonomy. Today is the 15th of July, 2017, and it's good to have you with us once again, ladies and gentlemen. We have to start the show off on another sad note, and I really don't like starting the show off by giving you these sad notes, especially when it means that we've lost another one of our freedom fighters. But I do have to mention that for those that were not aware, Dr. Michael Kaufman apparently passed away within the last week. I'm trying to find exactly what the date was and what his ailment was, but I did receive an email message that he had passed, and then upon digging, just for verification purposes, because you certainly don't want to start reporting that people passed that didn't, you know, that wouldn't be good form. I found his family's notification of it as well on his blog. Dr. Michael Kaufman, of course, many of you folks know he's been a repeated guest on this broadcast, as well as many others. He's written a number of books. He was really instrumental in defeating the biosphere, what do they call it?
The biodiversity.
Biodiversity treaty, yes.
Treaty.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. He was instrumental in defeating that. And so certainly he has made a huge mark upon our country, and I think he will be tremendously missed. I know he will by his family, but I know he's impacted many, many other lives as well. So Dr. Michael Kaufman, passing on to the other side.
He was one of the key figures in battling against Agenda 21.
Yes.
And all that goes with it, basically locking up our natural resources away from the people of this country, which is what Agenda 21 is really about.
Right. And we have more of that to talk about today with the G20 having just concluded. And their theme of this year's G20 was shaping an interconnected world. So that we'll get to that as time progresses. We weren't here last week, and we announced, it seems like no matter when we, despite the fact that we announce ahead of time, there's always a certain number of people that don't catch that for whatever reason, that we're not going to be here. And so we had some people wondering what happened with last week. I took a trip. I actually had never been out west, and I decided to take the family out, you know, before they locked the country down with the toll roads and everything else. I decided to go out there and see some states. And I'll tell you, you really start to appreciate when you go through to the western states and see how barren it is. And I mean, I've seen lots of photographs and things like that, but when you're surrounded by nothing but desert, it really does make you appreciate the water that you have.
Yeah, imagine, it was a shock to you. That didn't occur to me, but the western United States, you know, minus the west coast, a lot of it is desert. As a matter of fact, I live at the northern edge of the Great Basin Desert, which includes Nevada and big parts of Utah and Idaho and some of eastern Oregon.
Yeah, I didn't quite make it up to your state. I almost did. I was going to go up to Portland. What we did is we went down to Arizona, saw the Grand Canyon, then drove. I wanted to drive up the coast, so we actually drove up mostly I-5, I think it was, in California. And I hit the California coast. We stopped at Monterey Bay for a while and looked around, and And I was going to drive up to Portland, but then we started getting short on time because we only had a little more than a week. And Michelle had to go back to work Monday. So I got as far north as Medford, and I decided, you know what, I probably had better start heading east, or I'm going to be in trouble. Because if I didn't have her back in time for work, I think she would have been pretty hot. So anyway, I started back and decided to take a shortcut. And I think you've already heard this story, Vicki, but my shortcut ended up not being, I didn't really pay a whole lot of attention exactly where this road went. And it ended up in Nevada, and which kind of surprised me. It threw me. Well, part of the problem, too, is when I made the decision to take the shortcut, it was in the middle of the night. And by the time that I was going through Nevada and I started and I saw the Welcome to Nevada sign, I said, Nevada? And that really woke me up because I was, prior to that point, I was already falling asleep because we had went, you know, I don't know. I mean, I had a number of stints where I would be up like 30-something hours at a time because it's a lot of driving. And so I really pushed myself to try to make it happen, you know, get as far as we could on the short time that we had. But that meant sacrificing a lot of sleep along the way. And so anyway, we were out there. And thankfully, I had plenty of gas. And that was the biggest concern because I know as far distant as the West is from any civilization, I mean, you can be out there in the middle of nowhere and for you know, hundreds of miles probably and not necessarily see anything. And so I was afraid that, you know, I made a point of not letting the gas gauge get below halfway empty before I topped it off. But I started going back through, and probably the most grueling thing of the whole experience was driving up this mountain, which I've driven up many mountains before, but this particular one, normally this doesn't bother me, but this was from a distance I saw, you know, in fact, I pointed it out to Michelle. I said, look, this is where the road's going. And you could see it was at a direct angle from top to bottom, and this is just massive mountain in the distance. So we got there. The road is literally like an S shape all the way up. And there's barely enough room for two lanes. And it's like hundreds of feet drop off as you start climbing, and there's no guardrails. So I guess they're counting on people keeping the car on the road. It's just something a little bit kind of grueling when you realize that certain death is inches away. And
yeah,
I know I can keep the car on the road, but it's something about the knowledge that if something happens with your steering, you're a goner. Anyway,
or your brakes.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you start up, then you're going. You know, going up might be slow, but coming down is a real trip.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out which mountain it was based on your route, and the only mountain that I can think of that fits the description is Battle Mountain, and it's a pretty good sized mountain, actually, kind of like in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, it was, because it was strange because it was all flatland, I think, as I recall, up to that point, and then when you get to that point, you're really climbing.
And then when you get over it, it's flat again.
Yeah. I think you got the right thing in your mind.
Yeah.
Because you described it perfectly. But anyway, yeah, you know what they say. I mean, it's a nice place to visit, but there's no place like home, I guess. The thing that really strikes me, and this is the thing that Michelle kept marveling at, too, is the people that actually live in the desert, and some of these people, of course, you know, you got the ordinary people that have houses, but most of the ones that we saw were people that looked like they were almost squatters. They have all these shacks out there. Some of these people actually live in RVs in the desert. Now, when we were out there, it was, you know, in Arizona, the car temperature thermometer got up to 115 degrees. And you've got people out there apparently living in campers. And I don't know if they own the property. I mean, the property, evidently, I guess it's cheap enough. I mean, Michelle actually saw a sign, $99 an acre for land out there.
Yeah, because there's no water, probably.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what it is. I said, see, we could buy a bunch of land out here. She says, well, you go right ahead. I'm not coming with you. But
you know what? People living in campers out there, that must be relatively new, you know, like within the last decade or decade and a half, because that would be one of the most miserable places on earth to live.
I don't know how you'd do it.
Uh-huh.
I mean,
but,
I really
you
don't.
Know, a lot of people with our economy the way that it is and with the way our country is being managed, a lot of people are just being shut out.
Yeah.
And I actually thought about doing that myself, you know, rather than dealing with everything you have to deal with in living in the cities, you know, just getting a mobile vehicle, a home that I could live in that moves.
Right. You know? But I don't think I'd want to do it in the desert.
No, not in the desert.
Well, and I talked to other people. People are asking in the chat room, is this live? Yes, it's live. Anyway, the thing is, I think I've talked to other people about this living in the desert, and I don't know if some of these people might be illegals that have come over and maybe found a way to get a RV camper. That was my first thought, is maybe they're finding a way, you know, and they're just squatting there. But I've talked to other people about this who saw the same thing and thought, oh yeah, that's been going on for a while. You know, like it's no big deal. And I said, well, what do they do for water? They got their own water tank. And because it does rain a little in the desert. In fact, when we were out there, it actually sprinkled a little bit. What's funny, here's another thing. I don't want to take too much time on this, but one thing that was somewhat humorous to me, because I had never heard of a dry thunderstorm. And the weather service, I kept getting these bulletins that said that there was like a 90% chance of thunderstorms and a 5% chance of rain. So that was one of those weird things, because here in Michigan, of course, thunderstorms are completely, you can't disconnect them from downpours and things like that. But anyway, that was just kind of an interesting thing. I tweeted the map where people want to see where we went. Because I don't care if people know the route. Anyway, so we talked about the Michael Kaufman thing. Now you came out with an article with regard to Bart Davis for U.S. Attorney. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, I would. Bart Davis is an Idaho state senator, and it's really not as much about Bart Davis. What my objection is, he was nominated to be the U.S. attorney in Idaho, and we had an issue come up in the state in 2015, and he was on the Uniform Law Commission at the time, as well as being an Idaho state senator, and he simply acquiesced to a federal mandate. Okay, without defending the state, without fighting the federal mandate, and so that's what my objection to him is. Okay, but the important part was the issue of 2015 that came up in the state, and it applies to all the states, not just Idaho. It was a federal mandate to the states, for all states. And what it was to participate in the Uniform Interstate Family Support Act, And what that was is a law written by the Uniform Law Commission for the interstate enforcement of child support. The problem with that legislation.
So he was behind a lot of that then.
Pardon me?
So he was big time into that. I remember we did shows on that.
Yeah. Yeah, he would have been totally aware of it, but although to listen to him in the Idaho legislature when the issue was being debated, it seemed to me like that he didn't even understand the fact that there was a technology issue underlying the main issue. Okay, what the main issue was is that this uniform law that the federal government mandated be passed in all the states contained a reference to a Hague Convention. Mm-hmm. So, and what the Hague Convention pertained to was participation in international law for the international enforcement of child support court orders. And what it did was to require our state courts to honor foreign court orders without review.
Wow.
Okay, just to accept them as if their courts were on par with our courts.
You know, what's interesting about this and frustrating about this at the same time is all these people who are on talk shows behind microphones who say things like, the United Nations is just a useless think tank. How many times have I heard, I don't know about you, but I've heard that a number of times over the years. The UN is ineffective, doesn't get anything done, blah, blah, blah. And yet we have all of these world government initiatives that are being furthered and implemented by different governments around the world, enforcing the UN mandates upon the populations. And then not just International Criminal Court. I mean, you name it.
Environmental law.
Yeah, the Paris Agreement. We've talked ad nauseum about that on the program, how that voluntary agreement becomes mandatory. And so how could anybody say that the United Nations is just a useless think tank?
Yeah, The action comes through the government acquiescence to the decisions made by the UN councils. And, you know, in this country, all they ever talk about is the Security Council. Well, the economic and social part of the United States dwarfs the rest of it, the security part of it. And so you have all these NGOs, these organizations that participate in the UN sessions mm-hmm. as it pertains to economic and social agendas. And those organizations bring those decisions and mandates back into our country. So they're really kind of like foreign agents who bring these foreign ideas into the United States and push for them to be implemented.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the ACLU. The ACLU is an interlocutor for the United Nations. So really, they represent the United Nations. They, as far as I'm concerned, they are foreign agents.
Well, you were wondering why the Security Council gets so much press. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that it's military. You know, they determine what happens militarily. And militaries make a lot of noise. You know, what with the bombs and the drones and all the killings.
That's true, but the what I consider to be the communist agenda of the economic and social organizations of the United States, they may be quiet, but they're deadly.
Oh yes, and you could argue even more deadly than the Security Council, which
absolutely.
I think that's what you were actually saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But anyway, let me go back to this Hague Convention.
Sure.
The Hague Convention references the United Nations International Rights of the Child, which is a treaty that the United States has not
ratified.
Yeah, ratified. So, and one thing about these international treaties and agreements, when you reference and a different agreement in the agreement that you're reading, unless there are exclusions in it or unless it has a specific reference to certain articles, the entire other agreement is incorporated in the agreement that you're reading. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Did I explain that okay?
say it again.
Okay. If you're reading a treaty and it references another treaty.
Yes, I know what you're saying.
By reference, the other treaty
is
considered to be included
in its
entirety.
They do this all the time. They do it all the time with laws.
It's a legal trick, actually.
With laws. I mean, the laws reference many, many other places in law. And that's part of the, I think this is part of the reason. Part of the reason they do it too is because they don't want you to understand what they're doing,
right?
And so they reference all these other different things that, in order to really fully understand a bill, and is what I'm talking about. But you're talking about treaties, same kind of deal for purposes of discussion. In order to really understand it, you got to go back and look at all the references.
That's right.
And see what they do.
Uh-huh. And a lot of times, the other references are a lot more important than the document that you're reading. Mm. Okay, but anyway, this Hague Treaty, it does only include two articles from the Rights of the Child Treaty, but the devil is in the details in this treaty, in the Hague Convention. Okay, mm-hmm. So as I researched, and I kind of did an emergency research project on this uniform law that referenced this Hague Convention, because it was brought up at the very end of the legislative session, and they were just going to ramrod it through because the federal government mandated that if this piece of legislation, this uniform legislation, was not passed, the state would lose access to the child enforcement system, which includes a lot of other systems, like the ability to search for errant parents, you know, like where are they in the country? And they would possibly lose TANF funds.
Errant parents, that would be deadbeat dads, probably.
Well, that's what they say, deadbeat dads.
What they call deadbeat dads. Yeah,
right.
I despise these media types that put, you know, they were actually reporting on the news deadbeat dads, giving their names out to shame them publicly. I am so against this kind of thing because everybody's family situation is unique. I mean, if now my children are grown. I mean, they're not children anymore. But I look at it, you know, yes, you should live up to your parental responsibilities and you shouldn't abandon your family and all that. And if you start a family, you should support it even if things don't work out between you and your mate, okay? But
well, except let me throw something in here. When your country has destroyed your economy.
Mm-hmm.
So you lose your job at, you know, whatever manufacturing, not even a manufacturing facility. Say you're, you know, just working locally in a town that lost a big manufacturing facility. There's when you lose a factory, it's not just the factory workers that lose their jobs. It's all the other businesses in town.
Right.
So when your own country has destroyed your own economy and so that you can't find a job, And then they come after you for child support, you know, throw you in jail. You know, what's a person supposed to do?
Well, you know, I know that there is a certain number of douchebags out there that just said, you know, they fold their arms and say, screw you. You know, you make it on your own. Good luck with that.
You know, that's true.
But the problem with these media outlets putting people's names out there, you're assuming that everybody that doesn't pay child support or gets behind on their child support is delinquent, whatever terminology you want to use, is a douchebag. And the problem with that is everybody's situation is unique. Everybody's situation, they don't know anybody's finances. So by putting their names out there, any prospect that they may have for employment or jobs or, you know, just standing in the community is ruined. I really think that some of these media outlets ought to be sued for this kind of stuff. I have a real problem with that. And unbelievably, we've already blew through the first half hour. We got a lot of things to talk about, so we'll pick it up on the other side of the break. Stay with us, folks. This is Government America. Vicki Davis is here. I'm Darren Weeks, and we'll continue here in just a moment. Don't go away. Welcome back to the broadcast. This is Govern America. GovernAmerica.com is the website for the broadcast. GovernAmerica.com, where you can get a lot of the latest news and information up there, commentary about various issues, all on the main page, updated continuously. And, of course, archives of this broadcast and the podcast of the show, which is posted later on in the day after we do the live broadcast. And then also The Technocratic Tyranny is Vicki's newest website, thetechnocratictyranny.com. And her other website, her older website with the classic research from the past, which is all still very relevant, is channelingreality.com. And then she's also a contributor of TVOINews.net. I think we established that it's .net. TVOI, the voice of Idaho, TVOINews.net. And, well, you know, the war on cash continues. Vicki.
Well, hang on a sec, Darren. Yeah. Let me finish telling the story Hague Convention, because I didn't really get to the part that to explain to people why it's important to them, even if they don't live in Idaho.
Okay.
This the underlying issue of this Hague Convention was that the European Commission is the one that funded and built the computer system that will manage the international child support enforcement system. It's a case management system. And what this Hague Convention calls for is for our states to be able to participate in that international system. And so that was, and the system is being run out of The Hague, at The Hague. And so what our federal government did to our states was to subjugate our state court judges to international foreign court orders, and they mandated the integration of a government function in an international system.
Yeah.
Okay, those are two things. Okay, now, the third thing is that this Hague Convention wasn't really just about child support enforcement. The language in the Hague Agreement includes liens, levies, execution. I'm not sure what execution means, but the filing of claims in probate and bankruptcy actions.
Mm.
So they'll be accepting foreign court orders from probate and bankruptcy courts. And what the thought that occurred to me was that we have been engaged in illegal wars over in the Middle East, and just all the members of Congress, they know those wars were illegal. The thought occurred to me, with this language in this Hague Convention, would a probate court be able to sue American soldiers on behalf of families who lost their breadwinner, and in their foreign courts, and have those orders enforced in the United States without review by our state courts?
See,
because
this is why I was so against the idea. You remember, not too long ago, it was a matter of probably, I don't know, maybe a little more than a year, if that, roughly around that time period anyway, there was a big controversy about these victims of 9/11 suing the Saudi government in court, you know, whether or not they were able to sue for damages.
Mm-hmm.
And setting aside, if Saudi Arabia had anything to do with 9/11, I mean, we know the neocons did. We know the Project for a New American Century, the Bush, the Jeb Bush, Louis Libby, the usual suspects. They were the ones that wanted the war. If Saudi Arabia had anything to do with it, it was just because they're complicit in the crime. And of course, people point to Israel. To me, Saudi Arabia and Israel are pretty much two peas in a pod. But the fact is that this notion of suing a foreign government, in court, any court, it is an attack on national sovereignty. And I believe, if I remember correctly, the outcome of that was that they could sue. Now, of course, you can't collect any damages. They're not going to pay you anything if they lose. But it's symbolic. What it does is it sets the precedent to break it down further and further, eliminating national borders.
Mm-hmm. They're trying to make it as if when you sue a foreign country, that it's the same thing as suing somebody in one of the states in the United States, which effectively eliminates our borders and our nation state.
Right. And that's the purpose of it.
Yeah. And what I've noticed is that they use these things like, you know, suing Saudi Arabia on 9/11, and everybody's going, yeah.
Yeah, stick
but
it to them.
But they never think about it coming back at us.
Exactly.
And that's what this Hague Convention does. And in the listening to the debate and participating in the research on this piece of legislation, on this uniform law that was mandated by the federal government, the discussion was all one way. It's like, you know, Americans suing for child support, you know, while the deadbeat father is working over in some other country. Well, it comes back the other way too, and nobody ever talked about the coming back the other way, and nobody mentioned the technology and the integration of our government function into an international system.
I did hear some discussion about it coming back at us, but it was mostly in the realm of our soldiers could be sued for war crimes and things like that. That was pretty much the extent of how I heard
well,
it could be.
But that's a different, that would be a different, actually, if you did break that down, it could be, like I said, you know, them being sued in probate court in a foreign country, and then having the court order enforced here in the United States.
Yeah.
Without review.
It's a bad precedent. And the thing is that if it's being done in Idaho, it's being done everywhere.
Oh, it was a mandate. It wasn't just Idaho.
Yeah.
It's just that
that's the thing people need to keep in mind.
The people in Idaho happened to catch it as it was being ramrodded through the Idaho legislature. But it was a mandate for all states.
There you go.
And at the time when I was looking at it, there were about 30 states that had not put that into their law. And so their legislators were working on it, and I wrote a series of about 12 articles about that one piece of legislation. And as a matter of fact, our Judiciary Committee voted for it not to be passed through committee. The Idaho legislative session ended. And Butch Otter, our governor, called a special session of the legislature just to pass that one piece of legislation.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, in the realm of implementing international instruments on a local level and on a national level, of course, we got the Obamacare thing that was passed. What was it, 2010, I think? Somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've got the Republicans now wanting to modify it. I don't think they're wanting to repeal anything. Obviously, they're not going to repeal anything. Anybody thinks they're going to repeal it, they're living in a dreamland. Now it's we're going to replace it with something else, although they're not really going to replace it either, because what they're going to do is tweak it. And the question a lot of people might ask is, why do we need to do this at all? I mean, why do we need universal health care? I mean, sure, it's great. I mean, if it was really a good bill and we really weren't a bankrupt country and the thing fixed the problems inherent within the system. But none of that's going to be the case. Our Congress doesn't operate that way. They don't solve problems. You can't solve problems when you are the problem.
Right. Well, Obamacare was really not about health care.
Right.
It was about establishing a system of managed competition, which is an oxymoron.
Well, and it was about international agreements, too, because Agenda 21 calls for universal health care. I mean, it may not put it in exactly those terms, but there's a whole chapter in Agenda 21 which talks about health care. And now with Agenda 2030 being extended, we have the G20. I got this leadership. Well, what is this thing called? The leadership statement. It's G20 Leaders Declaration. And they have a big multi-page document here they put out at the end of this thing. And they talk about safeguarding against health crises and strengthening health systems. See, this is a UN program.
Well, it actually isn't. It started in the United States, and it is about a global health system.
Right.
Using technology to build a global health system. And I wrote about this in 2009, I think it was. I wrote a paper about what the plans were for the healthcare system, and it included telemedicine. And you would think that if you were using hospitals in the United States to help doctors in the third world, you know, through telecommunications, that would sound like a good thing. But again, it works in the reverse. And so now they're really planning on third world doctors being teledoctors over the internet because they are cheaper. And why are they cheaper? Because they don't really get the training that American doctors do.
Well, okay, we can split hairs as to whether or not the origin of this is international or not. You know, you're looking at it from the technocracy angle, you know, which is everything is that's what it's about these days. But who is the UN ultimately? I mean, who are the people that are behind? It's the same crowd all over again. But this Agenda 2030, the healthcare is a big part of that. The G20, they have a section in here called Safeguarding Against Health Crises and Strengthening Health Systems. The G20 has a crucial role in advancing preparedness and responsiveness against global health challenges. With reference to the results of the G20 Health Emergency Simulation Exercise, we emphasize the value of our ongoing trust-building cross-sectoral cooperation. We recall universal health coverage is a goal adopted in the 2030 agenda and recognize that strong health systems are important to effectively address health crises. We call on the UN to keep global health high on the political agenda, and we strive for cooperative action to strengthen health systems worldwide, including through developing the health workforce. Now, I think what they're talking about here is we're going to see where we, the developed countries, are going to be investing a lot of money in healthcare systems for the developing world.
Yes, exactly. But you can't have high technology access just dropped into the middle of the jungle. You've got to build the systems that can make that happen, and that means transportation, it means telecommunications, it means fiber optic, it means training the people that are living in the jungle to use this technology. And then you can have a healthcare system.
Yeah, I kind of chuckled when I, because they say in here, we advocate for sufficient and sustainable funding to strengthen global health capacities, including for rapid financing mechanisms and the WHO's Health Emergencies Program. Now, you remember all the flu scares that we had in recent days and Ebola and how we talked about what a scam that whole thing was? All of these things, all these pandemics, oh, you know, it's going to be the end of the world. We're all going to die. Mm-hmm. And it all boils down to, oh, well, we got to throw money at it and it'll just all go away. You know, I used to have that. I played that audio from that guy, I forget his name now. I got it in my archives, where he said, this is basically we have to build the infrastructure for the other countries in order to rapidly deal with these pandemics. And I'm paraphrasing, but I played the audio, I think it was defense secretary, one of the defense people, high-ranking official. I think it was Hagel, if I remember correctly.
It probably was.
Well, let me see if I can find that. Let's see, Hagel. Yeah, here it is, I think. Let's see.
Whether we sit in defense ministries or health ministries, we all have a common interest in helping all nations, helping each other prevent and contain outbreaks. We must do this to support the development of healthcare systems and infrastructures that Secretary Burwell described a few minutes ago, building health security and capacity around the world.
There you go, Chuck Hagel.
Capacity, that's the key word. Building capacity. Capacity requires building the roads, just what I said, the roads, the electricity, the water systems, the fiber optic cable, all of it, the whole deal. Let's just, and as a matter of fact, Al Gore in his book, Earth in the Balance, he called for a global Marshall Plan, mm-hmm. global Marshall Plan, to rebuild the whole world, to make the technology, what we found out, you know, a few years later, to make technology available to everybody in the world.
Yeah, and he's positioned himself to be a huge beneficiary of that, mm-hmm. with his own investment company.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? It's not that I object to people having technology in other places in the world for things like healthcare, but they expected the United States and other developed countries to pay for it.
Yes.
And not only pay for it with our tax money, but to pay for it with our jobs, with our lives. I mean, you know, transferring our lives to other countries, and we then are supposed to become the servant class for the world.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and you got a problem with this?
Do I have a problem? Just a little bit. Oh, God, I could just go on a rant like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's frustrating. Well, another thing that's frustrating, I we've had a war going on cash for a long time. And Ron sent me this story. Visa now is pressuring businesses to eliminate cash, and they're offering incentives to do so.
Visa continues its war on cash. The company offering merchants $10,000 to upgrade payment technology and stop taking cash. The program will focus on restaurants and food establishments, but Visa eventually hopes to expand to other businesses.
Now, I did a little more digging on this and found a piece from CBS this morning, which elaborated a little bit more in depth.
Well, cash may be king, but credit card giant Visa is offering some small businesses an incentive to get rid of it altogether. The company announced the Visa Cashless Challenge. 50 U.S.-based food service owners like restaurants and food trucks will receive an award of up to $10,000 each. The money will help upgrade their payment technology and grow their business. The winning merchants must commit to being completely cashless. CBS News financial contributor Melody Hobson is here. Great to see you. It's
Good
been a
to
while,
see
my friend.
Old friends.
I know. I feel like for years we've been talking about this trend to go in cashless. Visa is finally doing it. Tell us more about this program.
So it's a very small program to start. It's 50 merchants. Now, keep in mind they have something like 30 million merchants that use Visa around the world. So it's a small step, $500,000. But the idea is cash is their biggest competitor. Cash is still the number one way that we pay in this country, and it's growing around the world. So it's not MasterCard that they're worried about or Apple Pay. It's cash. They want to take some of that business away from cash.
So who benefits when we go cashless?
Certainly the credit card companies, the debit card companies, the banks. They absolutely benefit. Remember, every time we swipe, they get a piece of the action. Somewhere in the neighborhood of 1% for them, more for American Express. Certainly the contactless networks like Apple Pay, Google Pay, because they're going to invest in those that technology for these businesses so they can accept those digital payment networks. And then at the end of the day, the merchant, you don't have to worry so much about theft. You're not worried about how you close out the cash register at the end of the day, taking the money to the bank at the end of the day. So all of those things go away. It saves a lot of time for the merchant.
You're not worried about physical theft, but you can be worried about digital theft.
Correct.
And other issues that come up with
cyber
this,
theft,
which remains a big concern.
Big issue and growing. The cyber criminals are getting better and better at what they do, and we just have to be very, very cognizant of that. We've read about these breaches, Target, Yahoo, the one today with Verizon. So this is something that we've all gotten used to, and we have to understand they're getting more and more sophisticated.
And you just have to accept it as a way of life, and that every once in a while they're going to have to send me a new credit card because one's going to be breached.
It's just a way of life.
Right? I mean,
well, let's hope it gets better at some point. I mean, we're still far behind Europe in what they've done with chip and pay. We have the chip piece. We haven't gotten the PIN piece done yet, which is the double two-factor authentication that really helps sort of cut down on this level of theft. But, you know, certainly it's the way
there.
It's going to be.
Goodbye,
yeah. Right.
ATMs,
exactly.
Huh?
No.
ATMs.
I still like the cash, everyone.
I like cash, too. We spend more when we use credit.
All right, let's get out of that. Yeah, you know, and I come back to S-1241, Combating Money Laundering, Terrorist Financing, and Counterfeiting Act of 2017, a bill in Congress right now, which would require everyone, if they are carrying over $10,000 in cash, to report it to the government. And also, you have, you know, any assets, like Bitcoin and things like that, you would have to, you know, so it's becoming illegal. You know, if this bill is passed, it's another major step toward, you know, they always say about guns, registration precedes confiscation. And in the case of money, Again, registration precedes confiscation. If you have to report on yourself what kind of assets that you're carrying, then that can be confiscated at any time. When you go through the airport, a lot of times, or even on the roadways, cops seize large amounts of cash. If they already now, it's gotten to the point where if they see you have a lot of money, all of a sudden you're a suspect. You're potentially a criminal. Why are you carrying all that cash? And so the writing here is very much on the wall. If you have anything, slave, then you must be a criminal. You don't have the right to your own property. And now we have the corporations, the big credit card companies, piling on.
Wow.
Time's going by very quick. But
yeah. Well, that is part of the decline of the nation state, because the currency, now I know that the banks are connected to the City of London, but our currency was domestic, and if they can eliminate the currency, then they've really eliminated the power of your national government.
Yeah, well, and that's the whole point, is to make everything. There was a move back a while ago to get rid of exchange rates. You know, a single global currency. There's an association. We talked about it. The Single Global Currency Association, where they're pushing for that. And many of the people that are behind that are, you know, former heads of the Federal Reserve and things like that. I mean, that kind of caliber pushing this. So
right.
they're making progress.
Right. And then you will have a totalitarian power in the world. That's where they're headed.
Yeah.
With all of these technology systems and global systems, the global emergency management system, the global child enforcement system run out of The Hague, and the list goes on.
Yeah, we got to take top of the hour break. Hang on, we'll be back, folks.
The crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
From just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro FM stations all across the country, and streaming live. From FEMA Region 5, this is our number 2 of Govern America. Vicki Davis is here. I'm Darren Weeks. And it continues to be the 15th of July, 2017, as we get right back into it. By the way, you're welcome to call in if you want to. 844-646-8376 is the toll-free number. It's toll-free, 844-646-8376. And you're welcome to call in if you have something to add. Vicki, I had to cut you off. All right. Well, the clock got you there. I don't know if you were done with what you were saying there.
I actually forgot what I was saying.
Sorry about that.
Can you give me a hint?
We were talking about the cashless society. We were talking about, shoot, I'm blanking too, actually.
Oh, well.
Maybe it'll come back.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what I was saying.
Oh.
And I even forgot to remember to that I had to remember so that I could talk, finish it when it came back. So there you go.
Yeah. Well, we also have a new piece of ransomware, a ransom attack. It's another good reason not to put all your eggs in the electronic basket.
A large-scale cyber attack that started in Ukraine is continuing its spread across the globe. The virus freezes computers and demands that a ransom is paid. A Danish shipping group, a Russian oil giant, an American pharmaceutical company, and a British advertising firm are among just some of the big companies that have been hit. This might all sound too familiar because a similar attack targeted the UK's national National Health Service just last month.
The first signs came.
Okay, I'm going to get out of that in the interest of time. They're saying this latest thing started in Ukraine, and now it's spreading across, you know, around the world, across Britain. Well, I guess Britain hadn't been hit too hard yet. But the thing is all of these malware attacks, all of these various things. I think they even mentioned in that piece that there's a nuclear power plant whose radiation monitoring system was taken offline for a period of time because of this malware. Now you talk about a financial crisis. If you have all of your financial entities and things that control your money, I mean, think of what a target this would be. Think of what a target it will be when all you have is nothing but, I mean, everybody has all their banking information online. You know, banks are already a huge target today, but not everybody does all their banking online. This is a bad direction that they're taking, and every single time they try to sell us something, oh, this is going to be more secure, it ends up causing more problems.
It can never be secure because the entire technology infrastructure that the United States was built on, once they started converting to PC-based systems, was a shaky foundation to begin with, because when they started doing that, the PC software was junk. It was not ready for production environments. But the corporations, they got rid of their IT people who, the mainframe IT people who actually understood systems and security and so forth, and they replaced them with PC jockeys that were using junk software. And so the technology infrastructure of the United States was built with software that was junk.
Yeah.
And so over the past, 10, 12 years, 15 years, they have been trying to put security retroactively, but it's almost impossible to keep up,
well,
you know, because the technology that they put in was consumer-grade technology, consumer-grade software, and, you know, everybody and their brother could, you know, buy the manual, learn how to use it, and hack away.
Well, that's the way the Internet, when they first developed it, security wasn't even a thought. They were just so amazed that they could even make it work that, I mean, nobody ever thought about security. Of course, it wasn't expected that it would need to be that secure, because in the days of the ARPANET, how it developed, it was all a defense system anyway. And so nobody, not just anybody, should be able to have access to a defense system. But over time it evolved, like so many other things that start with the defense industry, evolves into ultimately a consumer enterprise. And still, we didn't have the kind of security or any security originally. And then things started happening, and that said, oh, well, maybe we should, you know, put up some firewalls and make some safeguards against people being able to access other people's entire hard drive.
Yeah.
So it's just like the situation you described. It starts off being completely insecure, and then later on they try to put a layer of security over it after they've already laid the foundation. And Then situation in Europe, changing the subject here a little bit, it's gotten bad with the migrants in Sicily now. Italy is now threatening to close its ports You got to wonder what took them so long. They've been on the receiving end of literally tens of thousands of refugees. And this is a report from RT, which has been doing a very good job at covering this.
Italy is threatening to close its ports to migrant rescue ships operated by NGOs, which it suspects are being exploited by people traffickers. The country has been increasingly struggling in recent months with tens of thousands of refugees reaching its shores. Well, the Italian Prime Minister says his country's been forced to take drastic measures and wants his EU neighbours to help.
This message doesn't come from a country that wants to break the rules or abandon its humanitarian position. It's a country that is under pressure and which asks our European allies for a concrete contribution.
I'd like to say that we want to help Italy to address this issue.
Obviously, we have to discuss the issue together.
We do believe we can't leave either Italy or Greece on its own.
The Italian Prime Minister has also stressed that his country is bearing the brunt of caring for migrants. Under EU rules, refugees need to apply for asylum in the first member nation they enter. That's the catch for Italy. That places an enormous burden on that country because of its proximity to North Africa, from where many boats arrive. Italian journalist Marcello Foa says his country's been left to cope alone.
Italy has been left behind by the other countries. The European Union so far was not very effective on tackling this problem. I mean, they keep saying that we'll not let Italy alone, but in fact, all the measures that they have forecast or they tried to take were not effective. The reality is that all the big majority of the immigrants, they remain in Italy. They don't go to other countries. The majority of the Italian people, and I guess the majority of the European people, believe that this huge migration of people is not acceptable anymore. They are not willing to receive more immigrants in Italy or in Europe. This is quite worrying because if this trend will not be stopped, the risk of social crisis, social tensions, racial tensions between Europeans and immigrants will become increasingly higher and higher.
In other words, they're headed for a civil war. And this is exactly the warning for the West that we've been saying here all along. You know, we talk a lot about Sweden, but all the European countries are being overrun. And because they have a lot of sellout leadership that have done this to them.
Yeah, I believe it's because they found a way in the using cross-border banking. Well, it's the same problem. They opened up our borders, you know, and created the World Trade Organization without thinking about the security of our countries before they did it. You know, they just
passed the World Trade Organization, gave
rights to foreign corporations to just come in and invest in our countries. But the thing is that what it did was to create situations in which public officials in countries, you know, the third world and first world, they could be bribed and paid off in outside of their own country, mm-hmm. in a myriad of ways, you know, giving them stock or ownership in a company in a foreign country that basically is funded by some corporation that's benefiting from doing business in the United States. I mean, there are a million ways to pay off a politician when you have a whole world open to you.
Right. Exactly.
And without the ability to audit, without the law enforcement capability to investigate. So basically, they just opened up the whole world to corruption and fraud.
Yeah, now they brought in a former Italian Minister of Foreign Affairs, Franco Frattini. He discussed the situation because, see, here's the thing. It turns out that the NGOs, you know, we talked a lot about the NGOs and how much money they're making off of refugee resettlement. There's literally a whole industry now.
Yeah, it's a business.
It is a business. Exactly. And they're making a gob of money off of this. So they're working with the human smugglers. They're working with human traffickers. They're working hand in glove to make this happen.
I was having a conversation on email with people just a couple days ago, and we were talking about this. Mm-hmm. The irony of it is that refugee resettlement as a business under a, quote, capitalism is being pushed down our throat by communists.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. So people that think that we have a capitalist system in the United States, they're delusional. They're living in the past. This our country has been
destroyed.
It's going
by
communist,
design.
And communism is really organized crime.
Well, and the thing is, at the highest levels, the people that are pushing the communism and have pushed the communism are the same people that are pushing the capitalism at the highest levels, because these people make the money either way.
Yes, that's true.
That's
true.
The ironic thing about it.
With communism, though, they through collectivization, they can steal everything that you have, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're doing, really, with Agenda 21. That's what happened with the Bundys, you know. The government power was used to try and take the property of the Bundy family.
Yeah.
And it's happening all over the place. In Texas, there are landowners on the Red River that I understand that the EPA is trying to steal their property, mm-hmm. like within 3 miles of the river. It's using government power to basically steal from people.
Yep. Here's Franco Frattini.
There are some non-governmental organizations accused of actually fueling the crisis by allegedly colluding with the smugglers. Is that accurate? And if so, how big of a problem is it?
Well, it is a serious problem. There are some serious suspects that are put forward from the prosecutors that are now investigating on serious cases of suspect collusion with those that are trafficking in human beings. I hope there will be, as soon as possible, a verdict proving that these allegations are true or not. I suspect that if a prosecutor says publicly he's investigating over some NGOs, there is something true behind. And this would be a very, very serious problem.
Are you getting the help you need from Brussels at this point?
Well, Europe, unfortunately, is proving completely useless on helping Italy on solving the migrant crisis. When I was European Commissioner responsible for security and immigration, we were able to mobilize many member states' forces. Today, unfortunately, the weakness of European institutions and national egoisms are leading to isolating Italy in the middle of Mediterranean.
Are there concerns in your country of the migrants coming from Africa that some could be radicalized, there could be an increased threat of terrorism?
Yes, there is a concern. There are investigations. There are many expulsions of those that are caught among those that are refugees or migrants that unfortunately are discovered to be radicals and linked to terrorism. The phenomenon is serious one.
What about the stories we've been hearing here on RT International about some of the migrants being forced to work for various mafia gangs in southern parts of Italy? Is that accurate?
It is. It is. It is possible. Imagine every summer, every autumn, all those that are pick up tomatoes in the south of Italy, they are really slaves. They are in the hands of organized crime and mafia groups. This is another sad reality. Unfortunately, there are links between traffickers of human beings in Africa and those that from criminal group in Italy exploit these poor people. And this exactly because of lack of control, lack of Europe, lack of unite policy on migration.
What do you think of that?
You know what? I was listening to a YouTube video of Louis Gohmert in a Congressman Louis Gohmert in a hearing, and he described the very same thing happening with people in Mexico. The poor Mexicans, South Americans, they pay these coyotes like $5,000-$6,000 to come to the United States. And Representative Gohmert asked, I guess he was doing an investigation, he asked him, where do they get the money? Well, they said that, you know, some of the money comes from their relatives that are already here, a couple thousand, whatever. Yeah. But the cartels, the criminals, they basically make them a deal. If you work for us when you get to the United States, we will let you work off the difference. So the people that they traffic into the United States end up basically becoming slaves of the criminal organizations and cartels that are operating in the United States and in Mexico. So slavery is alive and well.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
It's this is so immoral. What's been encouraged to happen by previous administrations. That's one thing. I mean, I do appreciate that Trump is doing is at least he's trying to enforce the borders. And he's been, I think, fairly consistent with this.
Right. Well, he needs to get us out of the WTO, because if you can have a foreign corporation sue our country for not being able to do business with what is legal in some other country. I mean, you know, slavery is legal in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
So if they can set up a business and sue our country because they can't do their business here in the United States, you cannot have a country of laws and you cannot have a moral basis to your society.
Absolutely. Well, I had another report that I will skip in the interest of time, but the situation also continues to downgrade in Sweden, which is now deporting, I guess, 80,000 migrants because they've just become overrun with culturally deficient people. There was a 22-year-old worker at a refugee center who was just stabbed to death by one of the migrants there. So It's gotten to the point where people are afraid to go out. And how long would it be? You know, and the problem I have with all of this is that Trump is there right now. And the people that wanted to come here illegally are choosing not to because of some of the things he said. You know, a lot of the, you know, illegal immigration is down. And a lot of this is due to there is enforcement action going on. There are ICE raids going on. Yeah, the media doesn't like it. They scream and yell about it. But the problem is, how long will Trump be there? And as soon as Trump is gone, are we going to go right back to exactly what we had under the Obama administration? I think we will.
Well, it depends on who gets elected.
Well, that's true.
If they don't force him to resign.
But we got to keep in mind, too,
which is kind of what
the amnesty was given starting with the Reagan administration. So we were stabbed in the back by the Republicans before the Democrats ever started doing this stuff.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And that's what people forget. So, I'm not a partisan. I believe in, you know, it's like I always say, destroying America has been a bipartisan effort. And
The Reagan administration was kind of infiltrated with a lot of, it almost seemed, when I was looking at it, like a cult. These libertarian cult members, and that's going to offend a lot of people, but frankly, I don't care. At this point, I don't care.
Well, we shouldn't be identifying as libertarian. We should be identifying as Americans, because if it's party first and country, secondary, you've got a problem. And so,
well, everybody should go back and look at the history, because the ideology of the libertarians was to dismantle government. And what are we seeing? We are seeing the dismantling, the disintegration of government. Despite all of the propaganda, we're basically having the rug pulled out from under us.
Yes, we are.
And Trump has temporarily stopped that, but for how long, we don't know. But that was the idea behind the libertarians. Privatize everything.
Yep.
But in a totally private, that's fascism, number one. If you have corporations that have power, which they do once they take over a government function, you're transferring the power of government to that corporation. And that corporation, their business is to make money.
Mm-hmm.
So people become basically slaves under a system of fascism.
Yeah.
And our government has basically become really just a facade for corporate power.
Yeah, and Rex Tillerson now is evidently trying to shift the issuing of visas to the Department of Homeland Security.
No, yeah, that's great. The Department of Home Scam Security is where all the technology systems are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where the consolidation of power for the, quote, security, which includes everything having to do with law enforcement, you know, from the parking meter all the way up to the judges. It's all put under the department, technology for the Department of for Security.
Yeah, and another thing that happened just recently, just this week, I think, just a couple of days ago, is there was another court opinion issued, which broadened again. You know, Trump took the travel ban executive order to the U.S. Supreme Court and finally got a victory. And now this other court has come in now and broadened it again, broadened it anew. So now it's, again, family members are not exempt. You know, these courts, I'm telling you, we need ropes.
That judge needs to be impeached because he's not following the law. He's following his conscience, I guess.
He has no conscience.
Well, it's a global. It's not an American conscience because
no, he's pushing an agenda.
Mm-hmm.
He's pushing a multicultural. It is a communist agenda. I mean, ultimately, this is the undoing of our country. And anybody who has an ounce of sense that can't see this, you're mentally ill if you can't see this.
Right.
You can't flood a country with foreigners and think you're going to have a country.
Mm-hmm. I've decided, actually, to stop writing because I'm just so...
Oh, no.
Frustrated with the whole thing, you know. I work and I write, and but it seems like that nobody really has the power to do anything about it, and the majority of the people in this country, I don't know what's wrong with them. I honest to God do not know what's wrong with them.
Well, the part of the problem is that the people that need to read don't.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest issue, I think, is people don't read. You know, and the people that, somebody that would read something that you wrote are probably people that are pretty, I mean, they wouldn't necessarily have your information, but they're a little more up to speed on things that you write about or talk about anyway. And there's the problem is, I mean, you're educating, but you're educating in large part, the educated, which is really, in some ways, really what we're doing here, too. I mean, let's face it, the average American is probably not going to listen to Govern America.
Yes, that's true, and they're not going to read what I write.
And one thing, you know, a lot of people don't talk, I'm learning that a lot of people just can't handle the truth. They just, they can't take it. It's overwhelming to them. They would prefer to hear fantasies. They would prefer to deal in fairy tales. They prefer to deal with comedies. But they don't want to hear reality. Because the reality, if we're being honest with ourselves, and we have to, if we want to have a chance to get this country back, or at least keep a resemblance of what it once was, you have to start with the truth. You have to start with reality. And the reality is bleak. It's painful. And it requires people to do something. We're at the bottom of the hour. Let's take the break. We'll be back in a moment. Vicki Davis, Darren Weeks, and you. This is Governed America. We're back. This is Governed America. Vicki Davis, Darren Weeks. And if you'd like to call in, you're welcome to do so. 844-646-8376. That's toll free. 844-6-GOVERN. 844-646-8376. Now, I've got some of your clips, Vicki. We were talking about the migrant situation. And that really leads to a broader discussion of global security cooperation. PBS had a Frontline documentary, which you sent over, which talked about terrorism and specifically mentioned the French terror attack of November 13th, 2015.
So we're coming on the air to tell you about a situation unfolding right now in Paris where there have been a number of apparent attacks.
Three people are dead in multiple attacks across the French capital. There were at least six shootings in various locations. And at this moment, police are storming a concert hall.
I remember saying to myself, I hope there is not a Belgian connection. And I was proven wrong. And the Belgian connection, if I may call it like that, was soon very, very clear.
We started to understand that the Belgians are involved, and suddenly Abaoud's name resurfaces. Abaoud, whom we've been looking for months and who we believed was still in Syria. This was obviously a shock, but we also felt uneasy. How did we not see this coming? Our intelligence was maybe not as good as it should have been.
130 people were killed in the attacks. Most of the suspected plotters were already known to the authorities, and multiple opportunities to stop them had been missed. At least six were wanted on international arrest warrants for terrorism. One was under police surveillance with wiretaps and a hidden camera. At least seven were on terrorist watch lists. At least 12 were stopped, questioned, and even arrested as they traveled around Europe and back and forth to Syria to prepare the Paris plot.
You know, these individuals were on the radar. They had traveled to Syria. They were known to law enforcement and intelligence officials. Even with that information in the hands of intelligence and law enforcement, they were able to really carry out large-scale, spectacular, catastrophic-style attacks. Because law enforcement and Border Patrol officials from one country simply don't communicate with their counterparts in another country in a way that would make information that they possess actionable and, you know, really disrupt or stop a terrorist from moving across their border.
So here's the sales pitch. Okay, yep. National sovereignty and borders are getting in the way of fighting international terrorism. You know, never mind the fact that all these guys, as they say in the piece, are already known, already being tracked by intelligence agencies. You know, but we gotta break down these borders. We have to combine intelligence systems, and so, you know, because we can't possibly use a telephone and pick up and call each other and say, hey, you know, there's no way intelligence agencies will intermingle and share information. They never do that, do they? No, they can't do that. We have to, you know, you can see the sales pitch being pushed for combining of resources and merging across borders.
And that's what the Department of Home Scam Security does, because the Director of National Intelligence is connected to the Department of Home Scam Security. And that's what they want to do, is to have a global system of terrorists, a single system. You know, Darren, I just makes me crazy, you know, that they want to build all of these systems so that you have the information. Information is the objective. It's not fighting terrorism that's the objective. It's building the information system. And that's true across the board for every single government function. It's to build the system, not to actually have the system serve the functional purpose that it was the ostensibly designed to serve. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that when you have a global system, there are different interests. And I was thinking about that in terms of importing of Indians to work in the United States on the IT systems of government. The U.S. Trade Representative is seeking comments on trade agreements that have been signed, and I am going to write something up. It'll probably be different than what they anticipate. But if you have Indians like Tata, that company, designing and writing a computer system for government statistics, for example, it's the only person that really knows how a program is functioning is the programmer who wrote it. Mm-hmm. Unless it has to be fixed by somebody else. And then that one person is the one person that knows what is really embedded in that code. And if they come to this country as programmers to design and write systems for the United States, gee whiz, there might be bugs in the system that prevents it from functioning, a flaw in the system that prevents it from reporting the one key piece of information that you need for the system to function as it was supposed to function. Okay, mm-hmm. Let me give you an example. In the 1990s, they had 65,000 visas were authorized for H-1Bs. There were forms that had multiple visa applications that should have been counted. I don't know if the form had 30 H-1B applications. In the system that was designed by somebody, they counted those multiple visa applications as one.
Hmm.
So against a $65,000 cap of H-1Bs, they had these applications that had 30 names on them counted as one.
Wow.
That's the kind of problem that can be counted as a bug, just a silly guy making a mistake in a program.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the problem I have, too, with this business of, I don't know how we missed this guy. You know, we have them all on our radar. You know, we're tracking them, in some cases arresting them. What happened to the ones that were arrested? Oh, well, we must have let them go for some reason, because they're continuing to plot. And yet, how did we miss them? We don't understand. We're just a bunch of bumbling, fumbling fools in the intelligence community, I guess.
And what the thing is that once the Cold War was over, they needed common enemies. So they made the common enemy international terrorism. I mean, we have got a security infrastructure like nobody's business. I mean, we've got the military, we've got our police departments, but nobody can stop international terrorism because it doesn't exist as an entity. It's the behavior of a few individuals.
Well, it's nobody wants to stop it. I mean, that's the problem.
Exactly. They've worked very hard to get it going.
They've worked very hard to get it going. Why would they want to stop it?
Right.
They're accomplishing everything they want to do.
The common enemy is, quote, pollution. Pollution is a common enemy, so we need Agenda 21 to, you know, catalog everything, keep track of everything, control everything, that anybody does.
We come back to the report from Iron Mountain, the Iron Mountain report, on the possibility and desirability of peace, which Leonard C. Lewin took credit for writing. Who knows if he really did it, or if it really was a think tank that came out with, and he just took credit for it to discredit it. But the point is that the thing hit the mark every step of the way, as far as I can tell.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, where they, you know, the idea, for those that don't know, you know, the Iron Mountain report was something that was circulated. How many years ago was that? That was a matter of decades ago now. But
yeah, a long time.
Anyway, it was very hot in the Patriot movement at the time, because this report came out, and they were talking about, it was a think tank, ostensibly, that was brainstorming about ways that they could transition in a world where permanent peace, you know, in the absence of war, what kind of evil boogeyman could we use as a substitute for war to control the people? Basically, that's the summary of it. And they were brainstorming all these different various things. And one of the major things that they came up with was the environment and pollution. And so you can see very clearly that they're now, obviously, the war agenda hasn't subsided. They certainly are pushing that forward, but they're also incorporating these other things into it additionally. And so, hence all of the environmental, global warming, you know, the power of nightmares, you know,
right.
all of these different nightmares everywhere.
You know what I think the war agenda is about? Because military is attached to the nation state. And so I think they're really trying to create a global military. As a matter of fact, I know that the military is engaged in the building of global systems as the civilian government, probably more so because they're the ones that have all of the physical surveillance systems. And but they are over in the Middle East training a military force supposedly to fight ISIS. And I saw a news story where they just took Mosul back from ISIS.
They did, yeah.
You know, supposed to be a big victory.
Yes.
Well, when you look at the images on the news, Mosul is totally destroyed. It's nothing but rubble.
Well, that's a victory.
Yeah, that's a victory because now it has to be rebuilt. And it'll
there
be
you
all
go.
Rebuilt
there
with,
it is,
with
right there. That's where I was getting ready to go next. Yeah, I mean, these people don't think like we think. Lives, you know, who cares about a few brown people or a few thousand brown people?
I mean, well, it isn't just brown people.
Well, that's true.
It just happens to be in the Middle East because that was a place where people would fight back. And so it was a good place. You know, it was like going in there was like hitting a wasp's nest with a stick. You know, they all come out.
Yeah. That's true.
And they come after you. And so it was the perfect location to have the center of war fighting so that they could build the global military.
Yeah.
To go with the global government, the whole damn technology-based totalitarian system that will enslave all of the people of the world forever. There will never be any more freedom. No more freedom for anybody, ever, anywhere.
That's right. That's the goal. That's the goal. Locking it all down. Literally a prison planet. Now, they turn their attention, this propaganda piece, toward promoting pushing yet another important agenda of the spooks, and that is breaking encryption.
5 days after the attacks, Aboud was tracked down to an apartment on the outskirts of Paris. In the battle that followed, one of the plotters detonated a suicide vest. Aboud's remains were identified 2 days later, but then investigators discovered that other suspected leaders of the cell were still on the loose.
We realized that there were people in Belgium who seemed more important than Aboud. Through phone intercepts, we discovered that Aboud asked for instructions or help from people in Belgium, so we got to work on them.
7 remaining suspects were holed up in safe houses back in their old neighborhoods in Brussels, where they were working on a new plot. Unknown to Belgian intelligence and the NSA, which was helping hunt the fugitives, the bomb maker, Najim Nakraoui, was in direct contact with a shadowy ISIS chief in Syria known as Abu Ahmad. Abu Ahmad avoided interception by using encrypted communications to give detailed orders and bomb-making instructions.
The individuals were sharing information. They were getting instruction on how to make explosives from individuals in Syria. The content of those communications were encrypted. There's no technological way to intercept those communications. We have not solved this problem. This is a problem that is with us today.
So backdoors for encryption, or you're all going to die of terrorism.
The problem is not the guy blowing himself up or the information. It is the system that is the problem, right?
Yeah, and I suppose if you force backdoors into encryption so that the spooks can all decrypt everything, the terrorists are all going to comply and only use encryption devices and programs that have the backdoors built in, right? I mean, they can't possibly use encryption without backdoors. I mean, this is ridiculous. The whole thing, it's the same argument against this that, again, it comes back to the gun control. Register all your guns. We got to get the guns off the street, or the criminals are going to continue to thrive. Well, the problem is, of course, criminals are criminals, and they don't care about your laws. Well, terrorists aren't going to care about your encryption either. And they don't have to use apps that already have the... Now, that's more convenient that way, and maybe some of the dumber ones will, but you don't think if they're really good, sophisticated terrorists that they can pull off... Using encryption? I mean, all encryption is just math. And the math is out there. So it isn't like they can't just develop their own. Or use some... I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous. Anyway, we have a couple of calls on the line. Let me go ahead and out to California first and take the call. Hello, caller. Who do we have here?
Hi, this is Daniel in FEMA Region 9.
Hi, Daniel. How are things going out there?
Well, you guys are cooking. You guys are cooking today.
Well, we're trying to keep from being cooked, I think is what.
Well, I as usual, I get my juices flowing just listening to you. Also, the one point I'd like to make or discuss with you is, what is the way out of this, in your opinion? I know my opinion, and I've expressed it to you, but I'm curious how you see, because the name of your show, Govern America, still implies we need a government. How do we, when we've got so-called representatives, who first of all can't really represent us, because especially at the federal level, you've got, 400,000 people per representative, something like that, and meaning voters. And so how can they possibly represent us? But in my correspondence with my rep, who isn't one of the worst ones, a guy named Calvert, he basically says he's going along with party leadership. Whatever they say, that's what he's going to do. So when you talk about Obamacare, one of my questions to him was, you guys put forth that, like your news, I don't know if you hear your own news there and during your break, but like they were saying, when Obama was president, the Republican majority put through a bill, I think more than once, to abolish and repeal Obamacare, knowing that Obama would veto it. But now, once he is out of office and Trump is there saying he would sign it, they haven't put it forward. That thing will never see the light of day. So since they're working together, in at least in that instance, how do we, the people, in your opinion, how do we get out of this when we have to use the people they say we can vote for?
Well, my belief has always been, and I'll let Vicky have a crack at this too, but my belief has always been that if the people fully understood the system, if they fully understood their power, just like George Orwell wrote in 1984, they could shake this thing off and basically have a revolution overnight. And in this case, I'm not looking for a revolution. I'm looking for a restoration. And the way that...
Yeah, but how?
Well, the way I view that is that the states created the federal government. And the states could rein the federal government in. Now, when the federal government is concentrating more and more power in Washington, D.C., it becomes much, much harder to accomplish. So with the current mentality, I hate to be pessimistic, with the current mentality, I don't see a way out of it, because you have too many people that are not informed and don't care to be informed. And until you change the hearts and minds of the people and get them to realize just how important this is, because everything is always about a numbers game. But I think...
Well, but...
Go ahead.
Well, it still sounds like you want to use the existing system to...
I'm not an anarchist.
I understand, but... I mean, that's to me the heart of the problem. If you want to use the existing system to, I'll coin a word, to remantle the existing system, you have to deal with the people in power who will never go for having less power.
Mm-hmm.
They'll never do it.
Well, the problem is...
History's shown that.
Okay, but the problem with anarchy is you end up... basically having a system where you have survival of the fittest. Now, you can have all these, like you sent me some links before, with some of the individual initiatives for policing and that sort of thing, but that I find more terrifying than what we have going on right now, because anytime you have community... I have to call up the link now again, but it was like a private policing entity in a community, and that's horrifying to me.
There's one example that's in Detroit now, and it's better than the government one, which doesn't even answer calls because they're out of money, but the private one will answer calls from people that aren't even members to help them out.
Oh man!
You know, the problem is look at black. When I think of private policing, I think of things like Blackwater. I think of, because I mean, what these people are?
Wait a minute!
They're hired mercenaries.
Yeah,
that was the initiative
of the
original libertarians, and that started in Arizona in Scottsdale with a privatized fire department. The idea that you could just have a privatized fire department by membership and pay them directly. And talk about, you know, setting up a situation for extortion.
Yeah, except they didn't extort anybody.
Well, they didn't. They didn't so, have the opportunity.
But let me throw this in. You brought up Blackwater. Who hires Blackwater? You and I can't hire them.
It was the government.
It's
the government. Sure. But all of this stuff is
like
public-private partnerships with community policing and these private policing entities. I mean, we're not going to get rid of the government. I mean, it's just realistically, it's not going to happen. I mean, if the government falls, somebody's going to govern.
Propose.
I'm sorry?
So that's okay. I understand your point of view. The point I'm trying to get to is, What's the transition? You're saying the states, but then we, the people, somehow have to do the same thing in a statewide situation that we eventually want to do in a federal-wide situation, and that is still get, let's quote in quotes, our people into government. But how do we do that when the parties tell us who we can vote for?
Well, I don't think it can be done from within the political system, because as you say, you know, the Democrats and the Republicans, they are both parties are working on the same agenda. There are they just have it divided up. The Republicans work on this part of it. Democrats work on this part of it. And I don't know how many of you noticed, but as soon as Trump came into office, they reverted right back to the agenda that was in play when George W. Bush was the president. Healthcare became right. The main issue again. Transportation projects, the whole thing. All I had to do was to go back to what I was researching at the time when George W. Bush was in office and begin and pick up right from where I left off. So you've got the Democrat Party and the Republican Party. They are working together on different sections of the technocratic agenda.
Yeah, it's tag team tyranny.
Yep.
It is. Perfect.
Exactly.
Tag team tyranny.
Which comes back to my question. That comes back to my question. In fact, I'll give you another example. I started taking your advice here locally in my little town of 80,000 people and going to the city council. And do you know that they quoted to me, you know, I brought up some questions. They wanted to raise a 12% increase in the sales tax here. They called it a 1 cent increase. They used our money to mischaracterize the increase in the tax and to lie about what it was for, because when it turns out, of course, the increased tax just goes in the general fund. They spend it for whatever they want. But, of course, they said it was for the children and roads and all the stuff that everybody likes. Oh, police and fire. And none of it would go to that because the county provides the police and fire. So I pointed that out at the at more than one city council meeting and special meetings that they had that were even on the internet, and all they did was lie right to my face. And the point is, they're not even at least labeled as Republican or Democrat. They're just power seekers in miniature. And they even finally got to the point where they quoted to me a law, which is a state law, that says, if a citizen asks them a question at a city council meeting, they are not supposed to answer. It's illegal for them to answer your questions at city council meeting. So you tell me, in a situation like that, in a little town like this, let alone Los Angeles,
I guess I'm not understanding.
What the heck are we going to do?
It's illegal for them to answer a question?
That's what they said. I never looked it up, but that they quoted the law to me.
I would be very interested on the
question, and if it has to do with anything to do with quote security, then
No. This had to do with the tax. We were talking about taxes, and in that particular case, they were establishing an economic development department. You know, so someone could go on neat trips and wine and dine corporate people and bring more corporations here and all that. And I was talking about that and the density of the new development that they planned, which is incredibly packed.
Okay,
I
can see that, because the whole economic development system has been internationalized, and what they're doing is bringing in foreign direct investment, and the ultimate objective, of course, is to sell our country out from under us. So, yeah, I can see that they would have in federal law that that city officials shouldn't talk about that, because then if you ask the right questions and they had to give you a truthful answer, they would be telling you that they are selling your country out from under you.
Yeah, no, if I said federal, I misspoke. It's a state law.
Interesting.
Yeah, well, state law, it's still the same. That's what I'm talking about.
Well,
the economic development system has been internationalized, and they are bringing in foreign money, which means communist Chinese money. It means Saudi Arabian money. Foreign direct investment can come from anywhere. It can come from Russia, our supposed enemies.
Oh, not Russia.
Russia. It can be, you know,
like
drug money from South America under a, you know, behind the facade of a phony business.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, Daniel. I as far as this anarchy stuff is concerned,
I'm asking what you want us to do when we have a even local government that won't accept input from we the people, from us the people.
Yeah.
What is, I'm asking your solution, not a false choice of this or nothing.
Well, I think I pretty much answered
plan?
I think I already answered the question. It's a numbers game. And I didn't say what we're dealing with here, we're dealing with a very late in the game. I didn't say it would be easy, and I didn't say it would even necessarily work. I think, honestly, my honest opinion, I think we're headed for a collapse. I think societally, I think you can see the writing on the wall. There's already things in place where you have movements that are, they are truly anarchal, but they're not anarchal in a benevolent way. They're anarchal in a very malevolent way, a very nefarious way, and in fact, they're communistic in nature. And these groups are going on all over the place. This Antifa have chapters in various states. I don't even know how big it is. I just know I've seen them on Twitter. They have various chapters where they're... This is a massive organization that's getting funding from somewhere, and we can speculate from where, but...
Starts with an S.
That's my suspect.
Right.
That's what I suspect. But the point is, regardless of where it's coming from, these groups are truly wanting a collapse of the governmental structure so that they can pick off the people, pick off... In this case, white people, I think.
That's what
it would
seem.
Those are the useful idiots, I believe. I think you're right about the collapse, but I think it's being done in a Saul Alinsky way, that we've got guys like Bill Ayer still active in this role, who start at the education level of our little kids. Mm-hmm. And when you run into people who've accepted the brainwashing, not everybody has, but when you run into them, the way they argue is they get super emotional and get into name-calling right away. And I think they're taught this at those indoctrination centers called schools.
Yeah. Well, I would agree with you on that.
Yeah, so would I.
I mean, it would be great if we had people who had morals and wanted to live in a community type of situation where everybody worked together. I mean, arguably, that's the foundation of what became our country. Unfortunately, today, going back to something like that, I think the UN would come in and fill the void. And I come back to my earlier argument. Somebody is going to govern. And if you eliminate all, let's say we eliminate our country, we eliminate our local government and our state government, you're still going to have governance in the form of someone coming in. In my view of governance is control. Somebody's going to fill the vacuum, and then you're going to end up fighting another revolution to try to get them off your back.
Only it's not clear that you could actually do that, you know, because
I think, though, in the difference that we have is, Darren is and Vicky, is that when you start thinking of not having a government, you think of a void, and in that sense, that it's created like turning a switch, like they do in these movies, these apocalyptic movies, where suddenly someone wakes up and everyone's gone, or everybody's a zombie, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily. I want to hear what you had to say. We don't have to get into my philosophy, but it doesn't have to happen that way. It doesn't have to be a switch on or off. It can be done very gradually, and that's what I envision.
That's exactly the problem with what you're saying, Daniel, though, is that that's exactly what is happening right now. And that is the problem. We don't have a government that is really functional, working for the people of the United States under the American system of government. It is being dismantled and contracted out. I'm not sure that we actually have a government anymore. We have contract managers who are managing the contracts with private corporations.
It's an administrative state.
And those corporations operate for profit.
Yeah.
So we already have the system that you just described. And how's it working out for us?
No. I won't accept that. We don't have the system I described. No way. This is very controlled.
Well, the system of slow disintegration, that is exactly what is happening, and it's been happening since the Reagan era, when they began privatizing the functions of government.
Yeah.
And that's why a lot of times Congress will hold hearings.
I don't think Daniel's envisioning corporatism as being the rule of the day.
No, not at all.
But
because corporatism.
Well, that's what privatization is.
Yeah, I see where Vicky's going with it too.
It's different.
Yeah.
Well, no,
we can talk about
it
that another time.
Not really. If you're talking about if you wanted to get rid of a government function, that's one thing. Dismantle the department. Period. It's gone. Like the Department of Education. Dismantle it. Gone. But that isn't what they did. They contracted out a function of government to a private corporation. All you're doing when you do that is you're transferring the power of government to a corporation.
It's a good discussion, though. I think these discussions are important to hammer out details, but unfortunately the difficulty that we have is that it's us deliberating amongst ourselves while the other side is going full force and doing whatever they were going to be doing anyway.
Most of the population is in La La Land watching football
Something. What were you going to say?
Probably, but let me throw you a ray of hope. I'll give you one example where what I envision is happening right now.
Okay.
And that is with this ridiculous Obamacare and single payer and all this other crap that they envision that is designed to fail. In the midst of that, we have voluntary medical cost sharing. And you probably heard that they even have ads on the Kate Daly's show.
Mm-hmm.
And she says she belongs. I've looked into it, but I'm under Medicare. I don't know if it's a good replacement for that as long as Medicare stays. But if Medicare went away, it's exactly what I would do.
Yeah.
And medical cost sharing supplants Obamacare, and people that are in it are very happy with it.
Yeah, I have no problem with that. I think that's actually a good idea.
That's all I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I'm talking
that's
about
basically
that
what
thing,
health insurance is supposed to
supposed
be.
Supposed to be.
What originally
exactly.
health insurance was. But again, it became a profit-making business with what I believe are actuaries that came from Las Vegas.
Yeah. Listen, I have to move on because I have a guy that's been on hold.
Sure.
Or somebody that's been on hold for 23 minutes. So, listen, I appreciate the call.
Okay.
It's good discussion. Whoops, sorry. I thought he was done. Cut him off there. All right, let's move on to the next call, which I believe is from Florida. Uh-oh. No, I guess they dropped. All right, I was just about to go to you. Call back. Sorry about that, caller. Florida, if you're there, I'll go get right to you as soon as you call back. They dropped just as I was going to go to them. 844-646-8376. It's a good discussion. It's important, an important discussion. because I think we have to have these to hammer out these issues. But as I said earlier, it's like we're all off in the corner debating what to do about this thing that's getting ready to eat us. And what do you do about it? I mean, you know, that's
the problem. that's the thing. People always want solutions, and quite frankly, I don't think we will have solutions that come from radio talk shows or even your local little Tea Party group or whatever. Mm-hmm. We need national leadership. We need for our national leadership to be honest with people and tell them what happened and why it happened, and here's what we're going to do to fix it. And unless we have... Now, the entire country may not agree with what the plan is to restore the United States, but if they understand what happened and why it happened, at least they know they have some basis for understanding.
Yeah.
Right now, it seems like that people's thinking is trapped within the last within a 1 month window.
Yeah.
You know, there is nothing past 1 month, nothing longer in the distance than 1 month.
I would be surprised.
And all we talk about is what happened yesterday or, you know.
Yeah, nobody, they have the memory of a fly, of a
right,
house fly.
Right, no understanding of the whole big picture of this global agenda, so that they can see who the enemies are and why they're an enemy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that we have to get out of these international agreements.
Yeah.
That was one thing I really hoped that the Trump administration would do, is begin to get us out of these international agreements and start dismantling this international system.
Yeah, well,
because we cannot restore our country, we cannot restore the what would be a decent life for all the people in the world. Nobody is going to thrive under corporatism.
No.
Absolutely
nobody. I wouldn't say nobody.
Well,
CEOs are doing very well for themselves.
Corporations at the top, they will thrive, but they are not the people that I care about.
Okay, we got the call back. I want to keep them on hold too long. Let's go to Florida. Okay. Hello, Florida. Come on in.
Yes, good afternoon, Darren. Good afternoon, Becky. This is Harvey in Florida.
Yeah, thanks for calling back.
Hi, Harvey.
Well, it's a pleasure to hear you folks again. You know, by the way, Darren, you're doing more than one person could possibly do with your wonderful radio program and making it available to people to call in. So that's a very important thing to turn this place around. So whatever you're doing there, just keep it up. I couldn't encourage you enough. You're doing a wonderful job. Thank you so much.
Well, I appreciate that, and it's a team effort. You know, Vicki is a big part of this, and she does a lot of work on this as well. So we're doing the best we can to try to inform and educate, and I just wish we were had some way of reaching out to more of the country, breaking through the barriers of the Patriot realm into the mainstream, where we really need to... that really need to hear this information.
Mm-hmm. Right. If yes, CNN was smart, they would take you on board and give you many hours on the air every day and every week, so that we could reach out to them. They could turn their operation around by having a truthful, honest, decent person at the helm, and I recommend you for that job.
Well,
because I don't watch television,
kind.
But I know it's very, very important.
I appreciate that.
You know, you mentioned Mosul before, and Vicki was all worked up talking about the rubble of Mosul, a wonderful victory in Mosul. You know, we supplied all the bombs there, all the aircraft, all the missiles. So we did a wonderful job in Iraq. That's in Iraq. We won Iraq because George Bush landed on the aircraft carrier and said mission was accomplished.
That's right.
So we solved that problem many years ago.
Good work.
But somehow we were still dominant. Right, because let's face it, what it's really all about is using the weapons, testing the weapons. You don't want them to get rusty. You don't want them to get rusty, and you have to train people to kill. So that's basically what we do. That's America's real job. So Trump went along. He gave the military full hand. He's hands off the military. And every single war, every test bed of death is going full steam ahead. The heroin is flowing. We have a problem in the cities with heroin and opioids, but they forget that all the opium is now grown in Afghanistan, and we've been there for 16 years.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen the photographs.
But not for us.
We've seen the photographs of the people, the soldiers there guarding the poppy fields. I mean, even Geraldo Rivera, who I don't endorse, obviously, but even he was talking about that, where our soldiers...
Yeah, but he's not talking about it now. That was 15 years ago when he was talking about it.
Well, different team.
You know,
I just read
a story the other day that Afghanistan, the people are seeing a tremendous increase in heroin addiction and opioid addiction in Afghanistan. How unusual. You know, we've turned the whole planet into a hellhole. We took heaven, and we turned it into hell. America, that's really our job. We got to face it. And that's why it's so important to have the open airways where a few honest people can actually speak, like on your program. Because this is a mass psychosis, the likes of which the world has never seen. Yeah. These death machines that we create now, Hitler only wished he had them. I mean, this is unbelievable. Death and destruction, and that's really America's business. It's unbelievable, Vicki. What do you think about this?
I think you're absolutely right. But if you dig deep into the UN agenda, Agenda 21 and all of that, the goal was depopulation. And what better way to depopulate than to kill off all of your young men in iterative wars? You know, lose the city, take it back. Win the city, take it back. You know, they win it, take it back. You know, you lose a lot of your young men that way. And I was thinking about that, you know, with the baby boomers in Vietnam. I never understood why we were in Vietnam to begin with. Well, it was a UN war. It was for the UN. And we lost 50,000 men. Well, that was 50,000 families. And how many children were not born because we killed off so many of our young men?
Yeah. Yeah, and how many children are being murdered today through abortion?
Yeah, yeah. So, and add that to abortion. I mean, there's been a war on the United States and our way of life, our government, for a long time. It just was not recognized as a war on us because it was fought through different means. And for whatever reason, people don't seem to recognize war that is not fought with guns and bullets. Mm-hmm. I mean, businesses in business, corporate business, they have always understood the nature of war because big business is war. It's war against the competition, but it's fought intellectually. Rather than with bullets.
Or we could say it the other way around. War is big business. You know.
Well, it's true either way that you say it.
That's right.
But, you know, whether you're talking about General Electric or IBM or whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
Microsoft,
they were always at war with their competition. But it just wasn't a war that... You know, with guys that wear uniforms and and carry guns and shoot at each other. It's an intellectual war. And in the global war that we're fighting, the people in the United States came unarmed. You know, we don't seem to have the intellectual capacity to fight this kind of war, and so people are just accepting everything that the media tells them, everything that the government tells them, even though if you did a logical analysis of it, it makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, and we come back to the knowledge. You know, when we go back to George Orwell's 1984, and you had the three regions of the world constantly in fighting each other, and all of this, you know, one would gain an advantage, and the telescreens would be buzzing all the time about the advantage that you know, a certain, you know, East Asia was gaining over, you know, Oceania, and you know. But it was perpetual war. It was a constant thing. And when we're talking about war being big business or business is war, either way you want to say it, knowing that, it becomes very obvious why we're never going to have any victory, because a victory would be a drying up of all the profits.
Yes.
And a
drying up of the control, the reason for the control.
Yeah. Exactly. Harvey, did you have a follow-up?
Yeah, wasn't it in 1984 where they used to look at the telescreens and scream hate? Didn't they have like a minute
of
hate?
Yeah, 2 minute, what is it, 2 minute hate? I wrote a piece on that with regard to Donald Trump, too, by the way, because a lot of the stuff that happened in this last election process reminded me a lot of that. Yeah, the villain appears on the screen.
Perpetual war.
Mm-hmm.
Right, perpetual war is perpetual peace. That was another slogan from 1984. It was all there, and we far surpassed that.
War is peace, freedom is slavery.
Really incredible.
Ignorance is strength.
What's that?
War is peace, freedom is slavery, and ignorance is strength. And we're living it.
We are living it.
That's what we're talking about. We're living it, but that's why it's so important to shed light, yeah. And that's what your wonderful program does. And let's we the people speak and shed light on these the vermin of the planet. That's really what it's all about. And maybe one day a few of the people that are actually inside the government will rise up and bring these people to task, and they'll use Guantanamo for its rightful purpose, is to set us free from these global monsters. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Harvey. Appreciate the call there. God bless you, sir.
Bye.
We'll talk to you later. All right, let's go to the next call. And I'm not sure. I think this one's from West Virginia. Hello, caller. Who do we have here?
Yeah, this is Kent from West Virginia.
Okay. How you doing?
Pretty good. Yeah, a couple things. This fellow on in 1984 dawned on me a couple of decades ago that now you and I and Harvey and most people listening to this will read something like 1984 and find it very fearful and as a warning of something to be afraid of. But there's a small percentage of the people that would read a book like that and take it as a guidebook, something to do. Like I used to watch movies about Tim Holt westerns, you know. It just dawned on me back when I was a teenager, I watched these Tim Holt westerns, and he would always save the day and the bank robber and everything. Well, I would take it. That was a lesson. That was a moral lesson for Americans to be good and don't rob banks. But it didn't stop bank robbers, so people watching it probably, you know, we're supposed to sympathize with Tim Holt, the hero. There's people out there that would sympathize with the bank robber,
Well, I think they look at the Bible that way. I think the people who are in power, who direct the affairs of the world, because there are groups, there is a group in the shadows that do this. We know this. And it's not conspiracy theory or conjecture because, I mean, they have these meetings. And very powerful. But I think they read the Bible that way. I think they look at Revelation, and they plan according to trying to make all of this stuff come to pass. I mean, we just played a piece earlier about Visa pushing for a cashless society. Well, gee, the Bible was talking about that since the Bible was written. And now we're seeing it come to fruition. So how are all these things just naturally coming to pass? You know, you've got people reading it and planning it that way, making it come to pass, because that's what they're driven, apparently, to do. I mean, what else can we surmise is going on? They want it to happen.
Well, that it is the design, because they have to get rid of the commodity-based system, because the independence of people is based on using the natural resources of the world. If you can go chop down a tree and make some money, that makes you independent of the system. With a totally cashless system, all of the control is in the hands of the people with the technology.
Yep. There you go. Anyway, follow up, Ken.
You're talking about Reagan. Well, what Reagan, you know, people are now realizing that all of these, what's transpired in the last, has data from the time of Reagan. What Reagan did was he came to the working man who was, you know, thriving to pretty much still, and he demonized, the welfare queen or something. So they got these working class people, middle class. The middle class is a construct of the labor unions and everything. And so anyway, all the tax money's going to the welfare queen. So what happened was they voted for Reagan, and then Reagan turned around and took stuff away from them. So now we've got Trump. You know, he's following the same playbook. I saw something on the television a week or two ago, and I never watch him, but I just caught it. And he was out in Iowa somewhere, and you know he's got all these generals and all these, his whole cabinet is all, he's surrounding himself with billionaires, you know. And he was out there in his red hat, you know, with his mob somewhere cheering him on, and he says something to the effect of, "I love everybody. I love rich people, and I love poor people. But folks, now don't you think, realistically, don't you think I'm better off having rich people in these positions?" So obviously he was getting some stick about, you know, "Hey, what about all the rich people?" And he went out there, and they all cheered. They went crazy. And so as if these rich people are going to have concern about them in any way, shape, or form. And is that just... I just was flabbergasted by that, and he's going to take what Reagan didn't take away. They're going to take everything away from everybody, you know, if they're able to.
Well, right, give everybody an allowance, monthly allowance to live, basically. What you just said reminded me of Foster Gamble. Foster Gamble, heir to the Procter & Gamble fortune, he did this movie called Thrive. And in it, he presented a utopia that is possible. And that free energy, there is free energy out there. And when it got to the part in the movie about two and a half hours in, when he's talking about free energy, I realized, you know, he is a propagandist, and here is Richie Rich trying to sell us the idea of utopia. if only, you know, we just accept this idea of free energy, we can all thrive. I mean, it was just...
Well, we've already had the concept of free energy isn't a new one. In fact, the Tesla Tower...
Well, that's what his point was. Tesla, you know, Tesla and free energy.
Well, but you
can't deliver it for free.
You're never going to have free energy as long as you have... again, energy is another means by controlling the masses. If everyone was able to produce their own energy... And they could be independent. and they wouldn't have to pay some company to give it to them. And
well, but even if there was free energy for everybody, I mean, what would that mean to you? You save $150 a month? You know, I don't know. Would corporations not want their profits to be so high anymore because they got free energy?
Well, they certainly wouldn't be able to put a stranglehold.
The whole idea is kind of like delusional.
They wouldn't be able to put such a stranglehold upon your... I mean, let's take the smart meters we always talk about. Now, thankfully, I still have my analog meter on the side of my house. But for how long? You know, I mean, we fought to keep it there. And, you know, but they're wanting to use these things to control behavior. And free energy, if you produce your own, you don't even need a meter. I mean, if you really weren't connected to the grid at all. Now, of course, most people that do that still are connected to the grid because they want to be able to, as a fallback, use the electric company if they don't produce enough or whatever. Or, you know, they overproduce. They can go backwards. I assume the new meters do. I don't know. I know,
yes,
the analog
that meters. Was the objective of smart meters. That was the purpose they were designed for, actually.
What, to be one-way or to be two-way?
No, to be two-way. So
well,
that
the old
you
analog
could,
meters were two-way. So
I would, don't know
they
that
were.
That's
yes.
true.
That's my understanding. Everything I've
okay,
read.
Okay, that isn't mine. Okay. They would only go one way.
Okay, that would be something to research then. But my understanding is that I've always heard people talk about generators and producing your own electricity and selling it back to the power company, and that's the way you sell it back is by, you know, going backwards back into the, you know. But see, analog. I could look this up later. But anyway, the point is that the electricity energy is a means of control, just like everything else we're talking about. And they can't have independence. It's very much the same way of, you know, making the United States energy independent. You know, our country has largely been, I think by design, dependent upon the Middle East until recently, when they come up with different avenues, some of it involving fracking, which is highly controversial. But, you know, I think the argument could well be made that fracking has come a long way toward making our country independent. Some would say at what cost, and we could debate that a different day. But it has made it brought the energy prices down, where we were paying $4 a gallon for fuel. So is it a good thing? Well, you know, if it's not damaging to the environment, then yes. But if it's destroying everything, then no. But the key is if you're energy independent, you can't be controlled as well. And anyway, we went down kind of a bunny trail here. Kent, did you have anything else?
We could spend some time talking about that because that was like the moving to the petrodollar was the first step towards having the economy based on energy inputs, which was the idea of technocracy.
Yeah, but I think for me,
which is actually moving away from a commodities based system. You know, where you use the natural resources of the planet to generate wealth. They want to be able to generate wealth digitally.
Well,
so that it is a logical system and not a commodities-based system.
I view the petrodollar thing as just the opposite, where instead of energy independence or resource independence, that is the mechanism by which the folks at the Bretton Woods hotel sought to control the rest of the world.
Okay, well, let me explain why I said what I said. Things occur in, when you are making big changes, they occur in phases. Okay, and after Nixon took us off the gold standard, it was just a couple years after that that Citibank, I think it was actually called City National Bank at the time, but they started offering credit cards to people. And they started by just mailing them out and giving people a $1,000 line of credit. Now, before that time, in order for regular people to get a loan, you'd have to go to a company like Household Finance. Mm-hmm. If you had good credit, you could go to your bank, but, you know, they wanted collateral, and it was a big deal to get a loan. But Citibank started offering credit cards that were not attached to any, with no collateral, and just on your signature. Mm-hmm. Well, the money that backed those credit cards were from Saudi Arabia. That was an investment on the Saudis' part to build the whole system of credit cards. Okay, there were a few credit cards before that. There was like Diners Club and American Express, I believe. But the majority of people did not have access to lines of credit instantly. And
we're so much better off now that we do, huh?
Well, no, I'm not saying
no,
that.
No, I wasn't implying that you were saying that.
Yeah, but no, that's how the
this is progress.
Yeah, that's how the Saudis got their hooks into our economy, was through the credit cards. And so they built this whole economy. Now, if you think about all of the amount of money that we owe to the credit card companies, and there is no collateral backing it.
Yeah.
Right? It's just credit, lines of credit based on signatures.
Yeah, everything is manipulated, you know, today. Kent, did you have anything else that you wanted to say?
Yeah, just one thing real quick. I know we talked about the health situation a couple of weeks ago and about how it originated, you know, with the employer paying for the health insurance, and then the insurance companies got involved in that. But I saw a guy on television. He was a congressman now, and he stood there and he said several times, "Now I'm an economist," as if that differentiates him from all the other ones who are lawyers.
Sure, he's an expert.
And he said that, and he said now, and he identified properly how it began right after the war, you know, with the development of the employer paying for the insurance, and how it, you know, it fed, how it, you know, the whole capitalist system took control, but then he said, you know, and he proceeded, and he said that well, we've got to lower costs, you know, blah blah blah, we've got to lower costs. And then he said, once we lower costs, that will free up investments so that we can create jobs. Now, we know that the healthcare system is the sixth biggest industry in the country. So if he cuts the healthcare costs, that is creating, you know, cutting jobs. So that's going to cut jobs out of the healthcare system and free up money to create new jobs. So there he's talking around in circles, because he's not, we talk about how we live in a country where everybody has to have a job, and there's always this constant pressure for a job, which, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But consequently, this healthcare system has created all these jobs. And so if you cut the healthcare system, never mind that the unhealthy people, they suffer, but all the people that work in this industry lose their jobs. So you've got to eliminate jobs for the purpose of creating new jobs. But really what you're doing is you're cutting taxes, and you're putting money in the rich people, and they're not going to create jobs anyway. So, I mean, I just thought, here he says he's an economist, and he's talking nonsense like that. You know, I'm not really understanding that the healthcare industry is jobs. And
you're exactly right. And I'll give you another example. This morning I was watching the National Governors Association Summer Conference, and there is a segment on there on workforce development. And you should watch that segment. It's the two guests that were on there was Zoe Baird of the Markle Foundation and some women from Siemens Corporation, but they had the exact same kind of illogic, circular logic going on there. They're talking about converting our education system to be vocational education. At the same time, they're talking about the new skills needed in the economy for this high-tech world. And but yet, the kind of vocational education that they're talking about is hands-on labor, and the state paying the young people to be apprentices in jobs working for employers in their community. Now, in Arizona, there was an article in the paper about 10 years ago, and they showed a student who was working in a vocational program. A high schooler, he was working in a tire shop in Walmart. That was his vocational choice available to him through the school. So here he is, this kid, working in the tire shop with shorts on, tennis shoes, changing tires.
Wow.
That is vocational training. But these people are talking about vocational training as if it's really going to do something to accelerate the learning skills of these young people, and we can have our people as young as junior high school going to work in apprenticeships, and they're supposed to be making a $60,000 a year salary when they graduate because they have this vocational training while they're in high school. As I listened to that, I was going absolutely nuts listening to it because it is so illogical, and I don't know how these people can promote these ideas with a straight face.
Mm. Well, what they've done is they've in Germany. I think that's Germany is where if you're a vocational student, it's not. You know, we live in a different side where if you don't go to college, if you're vocational, they sort of look down on. But there, to be a machinist or something is really, an engineer is really a respected position. So the kids will go into vocational, and they have the industry there. They have the car manufacturing, and, you know, if you go in and get a machine, I'm a machinist at Mercedes-Benz or something like that, well, that's a very respectable position. So they have a vocational education, and they go into the industry, like you say, in the city where they live. So what they're doing is they're looking at models like Germany and say, we've got to transplant it here. But, you develop vocational skills, but the factories aren't there. And so they're applying a model to a situation where it doesn't work, but, they're you know, obviously they're getting paid for it, a lot of money for it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just, as you say, the illogic of it. Yeah, as you say, working in a tire factory.
Yeah. Hey, Kent,
a tire shop. Yeah, yeah, changing tires for Walmart. And the state taxpayers, Arizona taxpayers, paying for his salary to learn how to do that.
I got to move on because we're running out of time. I got another call on the line. But listen, Kent, I appreciate the call and your input. God bless you, sir. We'll talk soon. All right, let's go to Texas now and take the next call. Hello, caller. Who do we have here?
Hey, good afternoon. I just want to reinforce Mark in Texas. I just want to reinforce what Vicky was saying about Saudi Arabia coming in with the credit cards through Citibank.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. That is very true. But Diners Club and American Express, there was one other one, Vicky, that was added into this, which reinforces what you were saying with the oil business, and that was gas credit cards.
Yes,
they were there real early because I was a member since 1970 of Phillips 66 of all things.
Yeah. Well, and the same thing, but they were gas credit cards that were issued by the company and only for their company. The same right. thing was true with department store credit cards. You could get like a Sears card, but it was only for Sears. The difference with MasterCard was that it could be used anywhere.
Right. Not,
well, anywhere, any early on, it was anywhere that accepted the card, but now they're anywhere.
Hold on, you guys are talking over each other.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. So you were saying the Diners Club.
Yeah, Diners Club was the same type of situation. The restaurant had to be a member of the Diners Club group.
So.
Yeah, it was a completely different world, and you're giving away your age, you know.
Hey, it's a little late for that. It's a little late for that. You know, neighbor and I was talking the other day about these cars, because my son just got a new truck. He really needed one. But he came down to see us. He's driving home, and the screen on the console that has, you know, the radio and all kinds of other paraphernalia, and he got the work truck. He didn't get one of the fancy ones. The screen just goes blank. He ain't had this truck 2 weeks. It's wow. just done. So he takes it in. I started thinking, you know, as kids, talk about showing my age, we used to be pretty good at rebuilding 327s and 350 motors. And we did. We hopped them up pretty good. In fact, you couldn't even let them idle because they have so much gas in them that flood out. But anyway, we got real good at that. But the problem was when you're souping them up to get them go real fast, you lost a lot of your dependability. And ain't that what they're doing right now? They're trying to make these stupid cars not dependable but highly efficient and highly entertaining. And they're losing all their dependability.
Yeah. It's sad to see, because the more garbage, I was going to make a joke about, well, maybe you got that malware crypto locker thing on your car. It's only a matter of time before you get ready to go somewhere and you start to fire up the car, and on the screen comes a ransom message that, hey, you know, you're not going to go anywhere until you pay the $300 worth of Bitcoin. You know?
Yeah, and you can put it on your Philips 66 credit card. Yeah, we'll take it.
It's sick. It's sick.
It's gone crazy. Who would have thought you'd have to take your truck in to have it reprogrammed?
Yeah.
Well, so you know what? A few years ago, there was an article that I read about a farmer somewhere, I don't know, in South Dakota or Iowa or somewhere like that. His John Deere truck or tractor stopped working, and they had to call in a technician, a computer technician, yep, from somewhere. So he was out of business for like 3 days.
Yeah. John Deere is doing this. John
Deere. A computer
Deere.
Technician to fix his tractor. Oh, you remember the old days, the farmers could fix anything. You know, their old tractor broke down, they could fix it.
Yeah, that's what they're about, farmers. But see, the thing is now, companies, and they've already, the automobile companies have already been fighting this battle and got beaten back temporarily because there have been so many people coming out against it when they wanted to come out with this idea that they could patent all of their code, the computer code, and it's proprietary, so that when you buy a car, you're not really buying the car. You're actually buying the rights to use the car, because the car is actually software that is proprietary and is owned by the car manufacturer. Okay? So they got beaten back by that because they wanted to make it where you couldn't work on it, or otherwise you were hacking their code. You know, and that's an infringement upon their patent or their copyright or whatever. Now, or intellectual property, I guess would be the word. So now, but John Deere, as you pointed out, John Deere so far has not yet gotten beaten back. There have been enough people. There's more people, you know, who drive cars than who drive tractors. And so John Deere so far has gotten away with this, from what I understand.
Well, I don't know if they have or not, but I thought, why on earth would a farmer buy a computerized tractor to begin with?
Well, they probably don't know. Well, I mean,
or don't have a choice.
I don't know how many other brands are out there. That would be a good question.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm waiting for the day when somebody figures this out, who is mechanically inclined, who will figure out a way to just, you know, make car engines and market just the engines and bypass entirely this whole computerized system that they're putting into cars that will allow law enforcement or anybody actually to control your vehicle.
Well, what'll probably end up happening is they'll make it illegal. You know, under some kind of pretense, be it environmental. You know, the EPA has got so many different ideas about dust and things anymore. I could see them, you know, your tractor's got to have a certain thing on it. I mean, this is how they've done it with cars. All this garbage that they put on cars, a lot of this has been mandated by the Environmental Protection Agency and these different governmental agencies, whether it be the National Highway Traffic Safety Commission Administration, whether it be government mandates and regulations for fuel efficiency. I mean, a lot of this stuff that has, you know, a car that should be maybe $10,000 or used to be $10,000, now it's $25,000.
Originates in California. That's true. Passed the law in California. And why is that? Silicon Valley. You know, every law that they pass that requires technology in anything, it's a moneymaker for Silicon Valley.
Yeah. Good point.
Moneymaker, or like Darren said, it's a proprietary thing where it's a hands-off. You know, like if you remove this panel, you have voided your warranty. And by the way, now it's 5 years and 100,000 miles. But if you remove that panel off this piece of this, you know, module, you have just voided your warranty.
And it's getting to the point where it's not, you know, a five-year warranty that you're losing. It may be a five-year sentence that you're gaining. That's how they want it.
Your warranty when you... A five-year warranty where you see them two or three times a year during recalls.
Yeah. Good point.
It's crazy.
Every month, it just seems like they just keep adding up more and more recalls for all kinds of stuff. You know, it's not really even pertinent a lot of times to the operation of the vehicle. I don't know. Well, guys, God bless you.
God bless you.
For now. Thanks for taking the call.
Hey, thanks for calling. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it.
See you later.
All right, bye-bye. There he is, Mark in Texas. All right, well, we've got only a few minutes left here. I don't know really where to go with this. I mean, we have the G20. We can talk about the G20. I got a piece here from Alex Newman, who used to write for The New American. I guess he's still with that group. But he's also writing for the Freedom Project. And he's talking about how the G20 is internationalizing or globalizing education. The G20 governments and dictators known as the G20 agreed to a document that touts various globalist education schemes. Indeed, high-ranking globalists took a break from demanding a new world order to celebrate the G20 jumping on the global education bandwagon as part of the shaping an interconnected world. A meeting in Hamburg last week, the governments and mass murdering regimes ruling the world's 20 biggest economies, communist China, Russia, Saudi Arabia, European Union, and more, agreed on a wide range of schemes while having policy for Americans made by autocratic foreign powers is troubling enough. The group's decision to get involved in education should set off alarm bells worldwide. Quote, and this is, I was reading from this leader's declaration, and he's quoting from it too. He says, we note the UN Secretary General's proposal to establish an international finance facility for education, taking into account other existing initiatives, such as the Global Partnership for Education and Education, cannot wait, the G20 said in its leader's declaration. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres is a proud socialist who led the Socialist International, a powerful alliance of socialist and communist parties, including many that have slaughtered innumerable human beings. Aside from its well-documented globalism, socialism, and extremism, Guterres played a crucial role in engineering the tsunami of Islamic migration into the Western world. The Global Partnership for Education, meanwhile, is a globalist front group that works to bring globalist indoctrination to children around the world under the guise of education. It is funded by, among other things, the regimes ruling Russia and the European Union, as well as U.S. taxpayers, the Rockefeller Foundation, and more. For some perspective, it is worth noting that the UN's education agency, UNESCO, run by known Bulgarian Communist Party operative Irina Bokova, is one of its partners, quote-unquote. UNESCO has long been demanding brazen indoctrination of children worldwide. The World Bank and UNICEF are also listed as partners. And the article goes on from there. I'll put that in the show notes. But there's a lot in this G20 leaders declaration. Again, shaping an interconnected world. They talk in here about the various subjects that they want to do, prospering global economy, talking about we welcome the entry into force of the WTO trade facilitation agreement. And it's called for its full implementation, including technical assistance to developing countries, sustainable global supply chains. There's a lot in here about the digitalization of the economy.
Yes, and it's all being led by, the leadership level for the thinking. It's communist.
Yeah.
And U.S. taxpayer dollars are providing the means, the technology, to do it.
Yeah.
So
they talk about the Global Partnership for Financial Inclusion. Isn't that a great name?
Yeah. Financial inclusion. And how are they going to do that? They're going to do it with the digital currencies.
They talk about harnessing digitalization. Digital transformation is a driving force of global, innovative, inclusive, and sustainable growth and can contribute to reducing inequality and achievable goals of the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development.
Do me a favor and read those words again. Global, innovative. There were about four or five words there. Those are the key words that people need to, whenever you hear that, those words, perk up your ears and listen closely, because those are the propaganda terms.
Digital transformation is a driving force for global, innovative, inclusive, and sustainable growth.
Yeah, okay. Those are the words.
Yeah, and they talk about, we recognize the information and communication technology plays a crucial role in modernizing and increasing efficiency in public administration. We recognize the important role of SMEs and startups play in the development of a full range of new and innovative business models, and will promote...
SMEs are the small businesses that they fund to serve as the locations for the apprenticeship training for vocational work that is just junk.
Yeah, they also have, this is something you'll find interesting, we're almost out of time here, but the G20 roadmap for digitalization. There's something that we need to research. The G20 roadmap for digitalization. And under the heading of boosting employment, they say well-functioning labor markets contribute to inclusive and cohesive societies and resilient economies. Digitalization offers the opportunity for creating new and better jobs while at the same time raising challenges regarding skills, social protection, and job quality. We therefore recognize the need to educate and train people with the necessary skills for the future of work. The importance of opportunities to re- and upskill throughout their working lives, and assist successfully adapt to change.
If you're talking about rural India, all of that could be true. If you're talking about the United States, what you're talking about is dumbing down your society. So there is no such thing as a global agenda that impacts everybody in the same way. It might be raising up the people in rural India, but it is pushing down the people in the developed country.
Yeah. Countries. Well, we got to go. Time goes by very quick. Thanks for being with us, listeners. We appreciate you. And join us back here next week. Please spread the word about the broadcast. Let people know that we're here. And pray for this republic. Do what you can to restore it. And we will be back here again next week. God bless you, folks. Thanks, Vicki.
Thank you, Darren.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.